Review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week we will be reviewing a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, book, etc. And this week we watched Spaceballs. My name is Danielle and here are the Mad Artists that I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey everyone, it's Samuel.
Hey everybody, it's John.
And we have one returning guest and one new guest. Say hi, guys.
Hi, it's Sophie.
Hi, it's Benton.
The infamous.
The one that we've mentioned a lot, but his first actual
yes,
appearance.
We've mentioned him several times.
Very popular.
He's real.
The man, the myth, the legend.
He's a real boy.
So this was actually Sophie's recommendation for this week. Sophie and Ben, give us y'all's first impressions experience with this movie.
I first watched this in high school with a bunch of friends, and which I argue that's like the best place to actually watch it is just when you're with friends. And I was like, this is so ridiculous, but I love it. And it's such a good... I love this movie. Like, really.
I mean, once again, I kind of grew up with this movie, so I couldn't tell you my first impressions. But, I mean, this movie is so stupid. It brings you joy.
John, had you seen this one before?
I had seen this on multiple occasions.
Me and Sam had never seen this before. This is brand
new. Sophie's been trying to get me to watch this for a while now.
Yeah, we were given the DVD, I think like 4 months ago or something ridiculous. And
it's
just
been much
now,
longer than a month.
Wow. Just now whipped it out. Yeah, I remember I texted Sophie and was like, so what kind of DVD did you give us? Because we tried to turn on subtitles and all they have are French ones. So I don't know what the deal is with this DVD.
I got it out of the $5 bin at Walmart. I don't know what you want
That makes sense.
That actually explains a lot.
Yeah, I had never seen this. I know I'd always been super hesitant to watch it. And I never really knew the full reason, but Sam kind of like hit the nail on the head last night that I am not, and also he is not super, like, long, lengthy parody people. Like, I've never, I love, like, fun SNL sketches that parody things. I think that's fun. I like a Harry Potter musical, but they have it split into, like, you know, like, 20 to 25 minute segments of it. And so I will watch, like, one little snippet of it and then come back, like, 3 weeks later and watch another snippet and think it's really funny. But I can't, like, watch it all the way through. I don't know. It just, like, it almost exhausts me, the constant, like, gags that are being thrown at me. So I had always been nervous about watching this because I was like, I know that every other full-length parody I've watched I either haven't finished or I haven't enjoyed. And so I was like, I'm just like super nervous to watch it.
I mean, what's funny about that is this is probably one of Mel Brooks's shorter films overall, because I mean, it's not a very movie-wise. It's not a very long.
Well, no, it's
parody.
Like an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So it's not too terrible.
Felt longer.
Sam, would you like to give your impressions?
I'm just not a fan of parodies.
Yeah.
I'm just not a fan of parodies. I like parody sketches, and there were certain things in the movie that were very, very funny. But after about 45 minutes, I just get tired.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing for me, where, like,
It was the same with Men in Tights.
Yeah,
when I watched
yeah.
Men in Tights.
I love Men in Tights.
It was the same thing. Great. There's some funny stuff, but I just... After about 30, 45
like,
minutes,
like, the kind
I'm
of parody
of
that I can watch all the way through and get behind is the kind of, like, very layered parody that, like, The Princess Bride is. Because Princess Bride, like, parodies all, like, fantasy stories and stuff
and
like that.
And in parodying it becomes the best one ever.
Right, exactly. But and they did such a good job of it, and, like... And the humor was so different, and that's the kind of like parody I can watch all the way through. But that's like a one of a kind movie. But yeah, so this one came out in 1987. It was directed by Mel Brooks and also written by Mel Brooks, Thomas Meehan, and Ronnie Graham, and stars Bill Pullman as Lone Star, Daphne Zuniga as Princess Vespa, and Rick Moranis as Dark Helmet. You can watch this in you can watch this in so many places. So. You can watch it with a Hulu, Prime, Philo, Showtime, FuboTV, or Sling TV subscription, or you can buy or rent it on YouTube, Google Play, Apple TV, or Vudu. And the IMDb summary for this says, a star pilot for hire and his trusty sidekick must come to the rescue of a princess and save planet Druidia from the clutches of the evil Spaceballs. So tell us some stuff, Sam.
So Mel Brooks is known for being Mel Brooks. he's done, you know, plenty of popular movies. The Producers, Blazing Saddles, Silent Movie, Young Frankenstein, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. Yep. Nice. So, you know.
I didn't know that.
He's Mel Brooks. Everybody kind of knows who he is.
Yeah, yeah.
He's well known for being a spoofer.
Yeah. Yes.
I think, it's what, like, he does. Throughout his time, he has spoofed just about every single genre you could think of.
The writer,
like a weird Al Yankovic of movies.
Yeah, the writer, yes, of movie makers. Yes,
the writer Ronnie Graham has done some stuff with Mel Brooks in the past. He worked with him on The Producers, on the screenplay of it.
Good on him.
And he's also wrote Finders Keepers, To Be or Not to Be with Thomas Meehan. He's also done episodes of MASH and episodes of The Brady Bunch.
Oh,
Thomas Meehan has not done much film writing. The only film writing he's done has been with Mel Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
What Thomas Meehan is most well known for is writing the books for 3 Tony Award-winning plays, which he won the Tonys for best screenplay, stage plays on all of them. The Producers is one with Mel Brooks.
The Producers is fantastic.
He wrote Annie.
Ooh.
And he wrote Hairspray.
Wow. Big names over here. Okay. I like all of those things. Yep. Good job, Thomas.
I was about to say, that's what I was like, this guy wrote Spaceballs?
This guy,
Annie,
yeah.
Hairspray, and The Producers, all 3 for which
all
won him
really
a Tony.
Great shows, yeah. That's awesome. I mean, I kind of got the vibe that this was, like, very, I guess, farcical play kind of feel to it, at least for me. Maybe that's just because it's an 80s movie and so everything kind of looks more like a play to me.
Yeah.
But I did kind of get that vibe, so I'm not super surprised to hear that. But yeah, do y'all have any opening thoughts before we dive into this plot here?
I learned a lot more about this movie the third time going through than I ever thought I would the first time. I didn't pick up on a lot of references and stuff the first time going through.
Mm-hmm. Right, there is a lot.
And then as we go through the third one, I'm like, oh man, there's like this reference to this movie, reference to this space movie,
mm-hmm.
like this like fantasy movie, like.
And see, that's what I was so worried about going in. I told Sam, because, you know, he was worried that he wasn't going to enjoy it. And I was like, well, you know, if it's like a solid parody, you might like it. And then I was like, I'm worried I'm not going to enjoy it because I don't think I'm going to get any of the references except for like a couple of the Star Wars ones. And so like there were times when he was like, oh, those are those little things. I get what they're referencing now. And I was like, what are they? Explain it to me because I don't know what's happening. Like,
she didn't know what Jawas were.
No, of course I don't. I'm sorry. I'm a Harry Potter expert. Jawas. I know nothing about Star Wars.
Ooh, teeny.
So what you're saying is Mel Brooks needs to write a Harry Potter spoof.
Harry Potter musical is already such a good spoof. I don't need another one. but yeah, like, I was so concerned, and sure enough, there were so many things happening that I was just like, you know, I got the Alien one just because I know, like, I haven't seen Alien, but everyone knows the chest bursting scene. I was like, oh, okay, you know, I get that that's from Alien. And then, of course, the Transformer thing I got. But, like, the like, Statue of Liberty thing, he had to explain it to me because I was like,
oh, you didn't
get
that.
The Planet of the Apes reference?
I was sitting there like, huh?
And it's
like, I was so confused by what was going on.
And there's so many more from, like, they referenced Star Trek, they referenced, like, Rambo. They referenced Wizard of Oz and kind of Temple of Doom. I'm not sure if that was...
They said Temple of Doom.
Yeah, I don't think that was...
I mean, Lone Star's costume was basically Indiana Jones.
Yeah,
in that
it's
first
just
shot,
Indiana
it was
Jones.
An Indiana Jones costume.
That I got. Like, when he's sitting there like that, I was like, oh, he's Indiana Jones. Okay, that makes sense.
Did you guys see the Hidden Millennium Falcon?
I didn't, but I did put it in the fun facts because that's a thing in the long opening like thing.
Over no, it was towards the when they stopped at the bar after dropping her off at Planet Duridia.
Oh, is that right? I didn't look at the whole thing.
No, there were a bunch of ships parked on top.
You're
of
right. You're right.
The Millennium Falcon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on top of the diner. I purposely put a bunch of
Spaceballs take place in a galaxy far, far away canonically. This is the question.
I feel like with certain other facts, it just might. It just might.
Yeah, I included a lot of fun facts about George Lucas's thoughts on the movie that I'm very excited to I'm gonna read it to you. No one spoil anything if you know it already, because I want him to hear it later. But yeah, so getting into the movie. So Planet Spaceball, led by the incompetent President Scroob, which I don't think I put this in the fun facts, but that's a anagram of Brooks. Mel Brooks, yeah, Scroob, has squandered all of its fresh air. Scroob schemes to force King Roland of the neighboring planet Druidia to give them the code to the shield that protects Druidia, allowing them to steal all their air by kidnapping his daughter, Princess Vespa, on the day of her arranged marriage to the narcoleptic Prince Valium. Scroob sends the villainous Dark Helmet to complete this task with Spaceball 1, an impossibly huge ship commanded by Colonel Sanders. Before they can arrive, Vespa abandons her wedding and flees the planet in her Mercedes spaceship with her droid of honor, Dot Matrix. I actually did really like the droid. Mm-hmm. I liked her a lot. I mean, the woman who voices her has done so much stuff, and I like her in everything. And so as soon as I heard her voice, I was like, I can't remember her name, but I know this woman, and I like her. She's great. Yeah, I liked her a lot. No, I will say one thing right off the bat that I did really enjoy were two jokes right off the bat, which was the scrolling thing, which I was telling Sam something that always drives me crazy with the Star Wars scroll is I read too fast. So I finish the line and then I'm sitting there for like 3 seconds until the next line appears. So usually I'll try to wait until it's like halfway up the screen to start reading so I don't lose my marbles. But I liked that it was like, if you can read this, you don't need glasses. I already liked that. I just thought that was funny. And then, of course, the long, like 30 to 45 second scroll. I was like, okay, that's funny. I like that.
That I did like that. The long scroll was of really the ship funny. Was pretty funny. Also, that was a very impressive miniature.
Yeah, as it ended, he was like, that's a big miniature.
They don't stop for nobody.
I thought that was funny.
We don't break for nobody.
But yeah, so Roland contacts mercenary Lone Star and his Mog companion Barf, which is that a thing that's Star Trek? Because I know there's like Dorf.
I think they're spoofing Chewie.
No, but the name, because Dorf is like from Star Trek, and so I thought Barf might be a play on that. I don't know. I only know that that's from Star Trek because of an episode of The Office, and that's it.
But it is definitely a reference to Chewbacca, yeah.
Well, yeah, I just thought the name was like a spinoff of something different.
I don't think the name, I just think it was just Mel Brooks being Mel Brooks.
Maybe.
John Candy, though!
Lone Star to introduce him looking like he was about to barf.
I liked John Candy a lot in this. I thought he was very funny.
She didn't know
who
John Candy was.
No, of course not.
John Candy.
He's in Home Alone.
Mm-hmm. Is he?
Yeah, he's the polka guy. Polka.
Oh, he's that guy. Okay, yeah. Because I was sitting there like running through the adults, and I was like, I think
that was actually his last movie role before he passed away. Was Home Alone.
Was Home Alone.
Yeah.
No, he's a very good comedian. I liked him a lot in this because it's funny because everyone else was so outrageous, and the guy who's dressed outrageously is like the straight man, which I thought was kind of funny.
Well, because he doesn't need to be. He already has the costume with the moving ears.
Yeah.
Again, an impressive costume.
No, there was a lot of like costuming and makeup in this that I really liked. There were a couple of points where I was like, I'm sure it was uncomfortable because it was the 80s and they didn't have like good makeup then. But in the shot with Pizza the Hut, the robot guy, I loved his makeup. His was so cool with all the chrome and everything. And then I loved like Yogurt's gold makeup. I was like, that's really cool. Yeah, I love pointing out like cool special effects makeup that I want to learn how to do with, you know, non-harmful chemicals in the makeup. But yeah, so contacts them, offering a lucrative reward to retrieve Vespa before she is captured. Lone Star readily accepts as he is in major debt to gangster Pizza the Hut, which he looked so gross.
He's so gross.
Awful. It went on for so long, and I was like, he's so gross to look at. I kept having to like look away from the screen because I was like, he looks so nasty. And it didn't help that, like, so my stomach and Sam's have been acting up for the past few days.
Oh, no.
And so that scene comes on, and I was just like, I was trying to eat, and I just, like, stopped eating. I was like,
yeah, you've got to feel bad for whoever has to wear that costume,
It was so terrible, because stuff is running down it the whole time, like
I believe that was, like, actual, like, pizza. Actual melted cheese that they
had. Well, because the guy next to him was actually eating it. So it had to be edible.
Yeah, like, some of it had to be.
Made of disgusting-looking pizza.
It was so gross.
So bad.
Like, it didn't look good. It looked so nasty and, like,
it wasn't appetizing at all.
It was so gross.
Again, though, that was one of the jokes that made me chuckle. Pizza the
Hut. Well, yeah. When they said Pizza the Hut, he actively laughed. He was like, okay. Yeah, so in their Winnebago spaceship, Eagle 5, Lone Star and Barf are able to reach Vespa before Spaceball 1, rescue both her and Dot, then escape. Spaceball 1 tries to follow at light speed, but Helmet orders the ship to ludicrous speed, causing it to overshoot the escapees by a large distance. Which, one gag that I really enjoyed throughout the whole thing was that no matter what hat he wore, there had to be, like, little, like, a thing he could fold out, and it always had to cover his entire head. Like, when he's out there and they're, like, combing the desert and everything, and he just has to open up the little flap, and then it has, like, eye holes. Yes. That was a gag I really liked. I was like, okay, that's funny.
And they're always way too big.
Just way too big, yeah. Because he
looks like a pop figure.
He really does look like a pop figure. He's so small. When he walked out and Sam was like, there's Rick Moranis, I was like, it kind of looks like a woman in that suit. Like, the way the suit was built was very, like, it kind of looked like, it almost looked like feminine. Like, it had, like, shorts and, like, tights and everything. And I was like, this kind of looks like a sexy Star Wars outfit. Like, it looks like something that a girl would wear to, like, be sexy, like, Darth Vader for Halloween or something. But it was just, it the was
sexy
just
spoof
him.
Because of that Darth
comment,
Vader.
I'm going to go with sexy Darth Helmet for Halloween this year.
Oh, God.
Not Darth Vader, Darth Helmet.
Dark Helmet.
Let's get real here. Darth Helmet.
But yeah, so out of fuel, Lone Star is forced to crash land on the nearby desert moon of Vega. The group travels on foot in order to evade the spaceballs, but they eventually pass out under the blazing sun. Because I don't know if this... So I haven't seen A New Hope in a very long time. Like, it's been years and years and years. Because when I was a kid, I didn't like it. When I was a kid, I liked Empire and I liked Return of the Jedi. I was bored by A New Hope. So I was like, I don't want to watch it. I'm just going to skip to Empire and watch Return of the Jedi. And so I would just go back and forth between those VHSs. So it's been so long, probably like 20 years since I've seen A New Hope, just because it bored me so much as a kid. And so, like, I don't remember if it was ever a thing that Leia was, like, spoiled or anything. I can't remember.
No. That was never a thing.
Mel Brooks was just hardcore.
I didn't think it was, but I had to ask.
He was leaning into... So she could have been... Leia could have been spoiled because she was a princess, and I think that that's what he was leaning into.
Yeah,
was the
it was
whole,
like the what
she's
if she
a princess,
was
what if she was spoiled
yeah.
kind of thing. But Leia wasn't at all.
I figured she wasn't because I didn't remember that from the other movies, and I was like, I feel like that would have carried over, but
she still kind of could be a but
no,
yeah,
but she
not
was
spoiled.
She was a badass, not a spoiled brat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He leaned into the hardcore, like, Princess Vespa.
Princess Vespa, her license plate even said spoiled rotten.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
I love rotten. I love
on the front
earmuffs.
That I thought was so funny when she was, like, in there, like, bopping to music, and you think it's just playing on the radio, and her droid's like, would you turn that off? And she pulls off the hair things in their headphones. I was like, that's funny. Like,
that's good. It's good.
I thought that was really funny.
Because
it surprised me, too. That was one thing, is that, like, I truly just thought they were, like, it was going to be her hair.
The way they, like, hid her hair behind her, even when she turned, you couldn't see her hair, but then I think it was all just folded up inside.
Yeah, it was just folded into it, so once she took it off, it all kind of fell. I thought that was so funny. I was like, okay, that's really good. Yeah, I think
when they went to nighttime, and it's like, once we get to the sun, it's gonna be bad, and then it goes to the sun, it's like, nice dissolve.
Oh. Again, the amount of fourth wall breaking Mel Brooks loves to do, honestly, in this movie, it is accented so beautifully.
See, and that's something I love. I think it's so funny when, like, spoofs purposely break the fourth wall. I think it's really funny. So all the fourth wall breaks I thought were great. I was like, okay, that's great.
The Schwartz fight scene where he accidentally cleaves
the boom guy, and we get
the Wilhelm scream just...
Or even, like, when they... We're trying to find the others, and they pull up the Spaceballs VHS, and then they're watching themselves on the television.
Watching themselves watch themselves,
and
like,
and they get confused.
And Lord Helmet has, like, a meltdown, existential crisis where he's like, "Wins now."
And what? They do the whole "Who's they on first?" They do the Abbott and Costello like,
bit. Yeah.
Yeah. They just do the whole "Who's on first?" like back and forth with now, soon, later, past, like all this stuff. No, I thought that was great. They are found by the Dinks, a group of diminutive, sparkly brown-clad aliens, and are taken to a cave occupied by the Sage Yogurt, who introduces the group and the audience to the film's merchandising campaign. Yogurt later teaches Lone Star. So I realized that they just combined Han and Luke into one character. They were like, all right, we're just going to have one. Yeah. We're not going to have these other storylines. It's just going to be Lone Star, and that's it. But yeah, so he teaches him about the metaphysical power known as the Schwartz and gives him a ring, which can be used to control the upside of the Schwartz. Yes, Samuel, do you have thoughts?
Nothing.
You have things you want to say?
No, I'm good.
Okay. So during this time, Lone Star and Vespa develop romantic feelings for each other, but Vespa insists she can only marry a prince. So here's another question that I can't remember because I haven't seen the original trilogy in a long time. So I don't remember. I know that Leia and Luke kiss before they find out they're siblings. Is that correct?
Multiple times, actually.
Yes, because they start like falling for each other, and then they find out they're twins, and they go, "Oh,
Leia never really falls for Luke. Luke's just hardcore after Leia, but Leia's always kind of into Han. But Leia kisses Luke once for luck as they escape, and then once she kisses Luke to make Han jealous.
Okay. But for Luke, it was like, all right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Luke was into Leia. Leia was never really into Luke.
I mean, it's Carrie Fisher. How can you not be?
Yeah.
Fair.
Another fun part of that is they start going into the fun merchandising jokes that they have.
That's actually based on something I have in the fun facts, and we'll get to it. But that was based on like a real life thing that was going on, and so I'll mention that when we get there. But I thought it was really funny.
That's like the most you see of it, and then like as you go through,
you see it over and over all over the place.
In the diner, they have the Spaceballs placemats.
No, I thought that was really funny.
Spaceball sheets.
Again, just breaking the fourth wall again. But yeah, so during this time, so they develop feelings, but Vespa insists she can only marry a prince. Helmet and Sanders break the fourth wall by using a VHS copy of Spaceballs to discover Vespa's location, and Helmet orders Spaceball 1 to go to the moon of Vega. When Helmet discovers Yogurt's lair, he lures Vespa out by pretending to be Roland and captures both her and Dot, taking them back to planet Spaceball. Which again, just the like most low level kidnapping of all time, just like, oh yeah, I'm totally like him, you can trust me, because your dad would never say you can trust me. Your dad would just be like, come here.
And
like,
then she just faints
and she and just they, like passes out immediately.
She faints so often.
She really does. Yeah, I never thought about it, but yeah, she does
a lot, and it causes issues.
But he then threatens to reverse Vespa's nose job, forcing Roland to reveal the code to Druidia's shield. Which that was such a back and forth scene where he's like, okay, yeah, I'm gonna give her her old nose, and she's like, no, don't give him the combination, just let him do it. And he's like, you're right, I can never do it. And then he goes, okay, let's actually do it. And he's like, okay, never mind. Like, it's so
after
back
she
and
passes
forth.
Out,
yeah,
and
she passes
about
out again.
Cutting. And he's like, no, because a nose is more important than
apparently
an
more important. And his combination is just the dumbest thing in the entire world. Anyone could have guessed it on one try.
I mean, hey, he's Druish.
And then they go to
four. Five.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
That's the stupidest combination.
And then
the president
comes in and is like, wow, that's brilliant. That's the exact same combination to my luggage.
At least he's smart enough to have someone change the
combination. Yes, then he's like, okay, and afterwards. Change the combination.
It's going to be 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 now.
Yeah, it's just going to be backwards.
And then I like the little joke where they accidentally like turn off the TV and then they turn it back on.
Yes.
Turn off the movie.
You turn off the whole movie. Turn it back on. No, I thought that was good.
And the doctor. Yeah, the
doctor.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, so Helmet and Sanders take Spaceball 1 to Druidia, while Lone Star and Barf rescue Vespa and Dot from the Spaceball's prison complex. When they arrive at Druidia, Spaceball 1 transforms into Mega Maid, a Statue of Liberty-like colossal robot maid with a vacuum cleaner.
That they actively call a transformer.
They actively call it a transformer. The vacuum is activated and begins sucking the air off the planet. When the vacuum bag is almost full, Lone Star uses the Schwartz to reverse the vacuum, blowing the air back into the planet.
They went from suck to blow.
But the group then enters Mega Maid and attempts to destroy it. Yes, Samuel?
Nothing.
No, I think you have thoughts. I think you should say what's in your mind.
I'm good.
But yeah, so Helmet intercepts Lone Star and reveals that he is his father's brother's nephew's cousin's former roommate. And Lone Star, and that I thought was actually a really funny joke where he's like, so what does that make us? And he's like, absolutely nothing, which is what you're about to become. And I was like, okay, that's pretty funny. But yeah, so Lone Star and Helmet fight using lightsaber-like weapons created from their Schwartz rings until the former loses his ring. Yogurt speaks to Lone Star, telling him that the ring was actually a Cracker Jack box prize and that the real Schwartz is inside him. Lone Star defeats Helmet, causing him to involuntarily strike the self-destruct button. Lone Star and his friends escape the ship, just like barely, while Scroob, Helmet, and Sanders fail to reach any escape pods in time, trapping them in the robot's head as the ship explodes.
See, that's what I would have done if I was doing the parody, is they barely escape and then it explodes. I would have had something that I've always thought in Star Wars, is just because you are just a little bit outside of the thing when it explodes doesn't mean you're not going to get hit. No. So I was fully expecting them to be like, we're safe, and then it to
and
explode,
then they just
and
blow
they just
up.
Die.
And that's the end.
That's kind of what I was expecting.
That explosion scene was... I like a lot about this movie. The explosion scene was funny because they couldn't get to an escape pod. All this crazy shit just happening, from like clowns to mimes,
literally
and everything.
A bear
coming out, and then they're like, all right, 1 minute left, it's your last call to press the cancellation button, and they go over there and it's out of order, nothing works in the future.
And then in this PG movie they drop an F-bomb when they find out that that the button is out of order, and I'm like, wow, this was the 80s.
Yeah.
If they're allowed to say this in a PG movie.
Yeah, they were allowed a lot more freedom than movies.
Which
nowadays,
that's one question I have. You said Temple of Doom hadn't happened yet.
We looked it up earlier while you were upstairs because we were curious, and this was after Temple of Doom and after the PG-13 rating had become a thing.
So we're thinking maybe PG-13 has been modified since then?
I don't know how this managed to get a PG rating.
Yeah, because
there were so
many things in this that were very overtly sexual.
Virgin
that was
alarm.
Like a lot of cursing. I mean, the straight up threesome scene with Scroob and the two ladies, like where he's under the blankets doing stuff and
the
they're just like, haha, like yeah, under the spaceball sheets. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff in here that I'm like, this is not a PG movie. Like,
no.
Not at all. Maybe PG-13 I'd buy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, PG-13 is good. Yeah, maybe they have changed it to where, like, maybe PG-13 back then was only for, like, hefty violence. I don't know. Because I know that's why you said Temple of Doom got it, was for violence, not for cursing
or
anything
else. That's
why
they established it for Temple of Doom, was because they thought it was too scary for kids.
Although, then again...
But they didn't want to rate it R, because it had no reason to be rated R.
Yeah. But then again, I also know that in... At least until... Up to a certain point, America and Europe had very, like, similar standards for what was acceptable for, like, children. Like, in Europe, sex is not a big deal, apparently. Like, but, like, drugs and stuff on screen is, like, what will get you rated R. Like, stuff like that will get you a PG-13 or R rating before a sex scene will.
They have actual sex ed over there.
Yeah, they have actual good sex ed over there. But over here, it's, like, the exact opposite. Like, you know, people can get drunk, people can, like, get high or whatever, and, like, it'll still be, like, PG-13, you know, depending on how overt it is, it might even be PG, you know? But, yeah, so that was probably also a big thing, is that may have been around the time that things were switching, where, like, maybe back then that was more fine in America, it was more like the Europe standard, but nowadays it's just so different that I was just so surprised. But, yeah, so they subsequently crash land on a nearby planet, much to the chagrin of its Planet of the Apes-like population. Yeah, when the apes popped up, all I thought was... What? Because I have never seen the old Planet of the Apes. I've only seen the new trilogy, and that's all.
I've seen it once. We were stuck on a band bus because it was raining and we were trying to go to rehearsal. And that's what our bus was playing, but I wasn't really paying attention to it.
Yeah, I have never seen it.
My only experience with Planet of the Apes.
And he knew what it was as it was like, as soon as it landed on the beach, he was like, oh, that's good. That's the thing. And I was like, What? And then the apes came up, and I was
The moment it landed, I saw exactly what they were doing.
And you see the face of the...
It clicks.
Which I think is different from what it looked like in space, if I'm correct. Did it look different?
It looked a little bright.
Yeah, for sure.
They changed it to like a little ape light to just make that reference just that much better.
No, I just remember I was so confused. He had to explain the entire thing to me, because I was like, haven't seen the movie... But yeah, so with Lone Star's debt to pizza nullified by the gangster's untimely death, how did he die again?
He ate himself.
He got stuck into his limo and had to eat himself to death.
Well, he didn't have to. He just did because...
He just chose to.
He got locked in his car.
Yeah.
And he ate himself to death.
So, he ate himself.
Fair enough. I wasn't sure. I think I missed that part, and so I was like, hold on, how did he die? Yeah, I had to find out.
No heart attack, didn't get shot, just ate himself
to
death.
Yeah, he just decided it's time to go.
Hey.
Do you have anybody want pizza?
Hey.
No one out.
Oh, pizza's the hut.
No one out. Pizza's the hut.
No one out. Pizza's the hut. I'm glad we had the same mindset there for that one.
Oh, God. So Lone Star returns Vespa to Roland and leaves, taking only enough money to cover his expenses, which both me and Sam said, take all the money. Like, why not? You earned all that money. After a lunch break at a diner and a strange incident involving an alien... Involving an alien and an astronaut similar to the events in Alien, Lone Star finds a final message from Yogurt, which... Was I the only one who thought that, the alien that popped out singing, did it remind anyone else of Beetlejuice for some reason? Yeah. It really reminded me of Beetlejuice. Like, I don't know why.
I mean, it just did. The dancing demon?
The dancing little puppet gross thing. I was like, this is Beetlejuice. It's very, very gruesome.
It's a gruesome musical moment. So it's like very Beetlejuice.
It's kind of like that dinner party scene. Like, that's what it reminded me of, when they made them all dance.
No, because the whole time I was like, I looked to Sam, I was like, I don't think they're parodying Beetlejuice, but this feels like Beetlejuice, like, very much, but I can't explain why.
But I can see the connection.
But Lone Star finds a message from Yogurt, informing him that the medallion necklace Lone Star has been wearing reveals that he is a prince, and thus eligible to marry Vespa, which this was... I hope an intentional parody of one of my least favorite things in, like, least favorite tropes in movies, which is where, like, I can't tell you until the moment is right. And it's always the moment when, like, suddenly you're just full of stress.
Yeah.
Because he knew what it said. He was like, yeah, I know what this is. And he's like, cool, what is it? And he's like, oh, I can't tell you right now. And it's like, but why not? You could have told him right now and it would have been fine. And instead he tells him way later when she's, like, at the wedding about to get married.
And Valiant could have gone and taken a nap instead of having to stand there.
Yeah, and they have to, like, shoot over there so fast. And I'm just like, I feel like that had to be an intentional parody of just my least favorite movie trope, which is wait until the last second to tell the person this important message that you could have said way earlier.
Oh, of course.
Also a parody of Obi-Wan in the original trilogy not telling Luke all this stuff until the sixth movie.
Yes.
That's
like
that's
at the
fair.
Beginning
that's
of the probably, sixth movie, yeah. Just the exposition dump because Lucas hadn't figured it all out yet in episode 4 and just retcons everything he told him from the fourth movie from a certain point of view. So I did tell the truth from a certain point of view.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, so he reaches Druidia and just in time to stop her wedding to Valium, announces his royal lineage, and then marries Vespa. Which one thing I did appreciate is that something I hate about, like, not Mel Brooks parodies, but, like, the parodies, like, nowadays, like, Scary Movie and stuff, is that anytime characters finally kiss, it's so gross, and they have to just, like, it's all tongue and mouth open and, like, bleh, like, super crazy. I was kind of expecting that, and I was like, okay, here it comes. And then it was actually nice, and I was like, oh, okay, I like that. Like, they didn't make it gross. That's nice. Although, why were your boy's eyes open for the entire kiss? Because for a movie, that doesn't make any sense.
I noticed that, too.
Because, like, in real life, people do that, and it's not, like, super weird. Like, I mean, I do that. But, like, in movies, it's supposed to be this romantic, like, both eyes are closed thing. And her eyes were closed, and his eyes are just, like, staring at her during the kiss.
He stares at her the whole
kiss. Staring at her.
I've never noticed
I'll say I missed that part.
Watch it because I was looking at it like, is this intentional or is this just the choice this actor made? And it's a weird one.
I also
one.
Just love how the priest progressively got more and more pissed off.
He was so frustrated.
He was like, I'm going to marry somebody. Just give me somebody.
He's like, shortest possible ceremony. Do you? Yeah. Great, you're done. Go.
Well, that reminded me of the marriage scene in Princess Bride.
Yeah. For sure. No, even what he was wearing reminded me of the marriage scene in the Princess Vibe. Princess Vibe? I just said Princess Vibe.
Yeah, you did.
Princess Bride is what I meant. I meant to say Vibe of Princess Bride, and I said Vibe of Princess Vibe, and that's what I said.
Vibe of Princess Vibe.
But that is Spaceballs, guys. So big time challenge moment. Go ahead and rename this movie for me.
See, that is so hard because they brand the entire movie, So if you rename it.
You ready? Space Battles.
Oh my gosh. Get out of here.
Space Battles.
I got it. A new trope.
Oh my gosh.
That's mine.
I didn't have one prepared today. Give me a second.
I didn't have one prepared. That one just came to me.
Oh, no,
I never have one prepared.
We think of them on the fly.
It's a little harder for me because, again, like Sophie said, it's advertised, so it's like... But it's also... It's encompassing the whole, like, sci-fi genre, so it's like...
The first thing I think of when I'm thinking of, like, a name for this is just space... Woo.
Space. Woo.
Or something like space. We can't market this. Here's the movie.
But that's the entire thing. Like the stuttering and everything is just
We can't market this. We can give you the movie. Knock off Star Wars.
Knock off Star Wars.
I hope you didn't want the other 10 episodes because you start off at episode 11 or something, like chapter 11 or something like that.
Space Battles episode 9.
No, you're like, wait, what happened to the first one? No, you don't get to see the first one.
It doesn't matter.
No, it's just like steer wires. It's like Star Wars, but spelled
steer wires. Come on, John. You're usually the strongest in this category.
I know.
Pressure's on.
It's hard. The one that keeps circling in my head, it's so dumb, but it keeps popping back up. I just keep wanting to call it Space Nuts.
Space Nuts? Oh my god.
Like, I don't know what it is.
Okay then.
I mean, we can go with a synonym. That's fine too.
It's so hard because Mel Brooks's parodies are normally so well titled that you can't really think. I couldn't think of a better title for it.
Fair enough.
Like,
I'll let you off the hook, John. You don't have to keep thinking about it because I know it's stressing you out.
It's so hard.
So I went on Amazon. The general consensus by viewers is pretty good. 85% rated it 5 stars. So do y'all want positive or negative first?
Negative first?
Negative. Okay, so I've got super negative 1 star. I've got a 3 star that's, you know, not as negative. And then I got a 5 star. Do y'all want the 1 or the 3 first?
Hit me with the 1.
Yeah, let's go 1.
All right, 1, 3, 5. So this is from a user called iReview. And the title says, yes, the title says, don't watch it again. Just remember it was once good. This is another movie that I adored as a child, and watching it now with my kids all these years later, it just doesn't age well at all. I wouldn't recommend taking a walk down memory lane and ruining the great memories you had of this movie by watching it again. 1 star. And this was in 2019. The 3 star is from someone named Amazon customer, you know, and it says, don't listen to 5 star reviews. They're just nostalgic. This movie is very meh. And it says, well, a comedy should make you laugh, and I didn't laugh once, so there's that. I smiled a couple of times. I never really felt invested in the story. The jokes are basically just puns of sorts and references to other movies. I mean, it isn't bad, but it just isn't actually funny. I would say the movie is amusing at best. Characters aren't well developed at all, which would be fine if the movie was funny, but it isn't. Overall, if you like puns and slapstick humor with old movie references in nearly every scene, then this movie is 100% for you. I'm not a slapstick comedy lover, so take my review with a grain of salt. To me, 3 stars isn't necessarily worth watching, but at the same time, it isn't a don't waste your time sort of movie either. You will probably think it was fine, not great, not terrible. 3 stars. And that was in 2020.
That's, see, that would be that would be the review that would be mine.
Yeah. You are Amazon.
You are Amazon customer.
Like, I wrote that last night.
It's a very respectful and like honest.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't a jerk about it. He was honest.
It wasn't his type of comedy.
I was gonna say, it's like, I mean, unlike, you know.
Because he was honest, like, I'm just not into slapstick, so, you know, take that as you will, you know. Yeah.
Like, you know, like, the 1 star, like, didn't provide, like, any solid basis, but, like, the 3 star.
That's why I wanted,
like,
to include the 3 star. I liked it.
The 1 star, I don't hate the 1 star as much as I thought I would, because this does definitely feel like a movie where you need to see it. I would recommend seeing it at least once, but afterwards, it really doesn't become that much funnier as time goes on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the 1 star review almost feels like someone who has seen it before and is like, man, this isn't funny.
Plus, and like, is it as funny as the first time you watched
it? Yeah, it's not as funny anymore. I don't agree with a 1 star review, but I mean,
but you get it.
Yeah,
like,
but
I
understand.
Yeah. So this is the 5 star. This is from Clay E. Apparently, he's a top contributor to rock music, and it's titled "Have Your Yogurt Ready." One of the best parodies of all time. It mostly makes fun of Star Wars, but they also hit on Star Trek, Alien, Planet of the Apes, even Transformers to a certain extent. Pay special attention to the lead-in to the main menu screen. This movie is like Animal House in that you have to see it at least twice to catch the stuff you missed while laughing the first time.
Yes.
Oh yeah, if you look closely, you will definitely see the Millennium Falcon in there somewhere. Hard to believe this is over 30 years old already, but I enjoyed it even more now because there are plenty of jokes in there that I didn't understand when I was a kid. If you haven't ever seen this, you owe it to yourself to do so now. 5 stars.
Yeah. I get that. I am the kind of person, I need to watch a movie like this twice. Like, even when we were watching it last night, I was noticing things that I've seen
that you'd never noticed before.
So many times. And I was noticing things.
Well, like,
that
even
I've
the eyes
seen.
Open thing that you said you've never noticed before.
I've never noticed that.
Which is just so awkward. You gotta at least look up just the wedding scene just to watch him just, like, fully, like, kissing her and then, like, just staring at her face. It's so ridiculous. But yeah, so time to guess, guys. What do you think this is critically rated on Rotten Tomatoes out of 100? Anyone can go first. We don't have to go in order.
I'm going to go with like an 82. Somewhere around 80. At least for like an audience score.
Well, this is critical score.
For critical score?
Because we'll do audience score in a minute, but we're doing critical right now.
I'm going to stick to like an 80%.
Okay.
I'm going to go 73.
Okay.
78%.
Okay.
69%.
John, with the meme, you're the closest. You're still far off, though, because the critical score for this is 1 point lower than Aladdin was last week. It is 56% critically.
Wow.
But now for the audience score. Same thing out of 100.
I think it'll be much better. I'm going to say 81%.
Okay.
I'm going to go with 72%.
All right.
I'm going to go with my first thought of 82.
Okay.
Around there.
75.
You were 1 point away, Ben. It was 83% audience score.
More people,
you were so close.
Yeah, because for an audience score, I mean, this movie is timeless.
Yeah, like, people love this.
This
is, yeah.
They look at Spaceballs and they're like, I remember this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny as hell.
And plus, comedies naturally do better in the audience category than it does in the critical category.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially parody comedies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, this was the third time I've seen it, and, like, certain things that I thought, oh, I'm not going to laugh at this. No, I laughed at that.
Well, now for IMDb out of 10. And there are decimals to it, so.
6.3.
Okay.
7.3.
Okay.
I'm going to go with like 7.5.
Okay.
I'm going to go 8.1.
Mm. Well, John, you were the closest because it was 7.1. You were two little decimals off. So the budget for this movie was $22.7 million. It was one of Mel Brooks's most expensive parodies that he ever did. I think it was actually his most expensive, closely followed by like his Dracula parody, and then there was another one that he did that I can't remember that was another like close second. In the box office, it made $38.1 million. So it did make money. It just didn't soar, you know. So I pulled a bunch of fun facts because I kept finding more that I thought were interesting. I managed to kind of cram it down, though. So yes, the Millennium Falcon is in the shot of the space diner. So George Lucas got a chance to read the screenplay before production began and loved it so much that he decided to have his special effects company, Industrial Light and Magic, help make this movie.
So that's why the miniatures are so good.
That's why the miniatures are so good.
Good.
Yeah.
ILM.
Yep. ILM was like, boom, put it in with, I believe, the only little, and this is probably a fun fact you had with that too, with the only little drawback is they weren't able to market any of it.
Yeah, that was my, yeah, so my next one is that Mel Brooks had stated that, you know, he obtained Lucas's full permission to parody any and all things Star Wars, but the one catch was that he couldn't, no merchandise of any kind could be made from this movie.
It would look too close to the original Star Wars.
Yeah, it would look too close.
It was a big no-no.
So it's the reason why the joke is that Yogurt and the Dinks, all they do is merchandising, and so that's kind of the whole joke, is that there is no merchandise, like, made by, you know, them.
Well, do y'all know the whole thing with Star Wars merchandising?
No.
The whole, so before Star Wars came out, Lucas was trying to make money to do it because the 20th Century Fox wasn't giving him much money, and he was trying to, you know, he was over schedule and under budget, or and over budget and over schedule and all that stuff, and he was really struggling to get the movie made, and he tried to sell the toy rights, any merchandising from it, to 20th Century Fox for, I think, $1 million, because he just needed a little bit of money to complete the movie. And they said no. They said that they didn't think it was going to be worth it. So 20th Century Fox had distribution rights and all that, and Lucas kept all of the merchandising rights for himself. And that's how Lucas made most of his money.
Was because so many people wanted, you know, toys and, like, you know,
Lucas made
all the stuff.
Lucas made, like, nah. Lucas made more money off the merchandising than 20th Century Fox made off of the movies.
Oh my gosh.
That's
so
awesome. And they would have been able to make all of that money.
And they would have been able to make
bucks.
All of that money.
Which plays into the line that Yogurt says of, like, that's how you make most your money.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's great, too, when you look closely into it, because I notice it, too, when you go into that yogurt scene in that temple, mm-hmm. and you look at some of the stuff, it is just basically Spaceballs slapped onto a bunch of stuff. I think it's like a lunchbox, and it has Spaceballs on it, but you can clearly see like a Transformer, like Optimus Prime.
They
try hard for it. They just slap something on. It's like merchandise.
They just slap the sticker on it, and they're like, it's fine.
I mean, to be fair, they did slap. Never came into play, but they, you know, they have a Spaceballs flamethrower.
Yeah,
for
I want one.
Children love it.
Children love it.
Well, of all the jokes in this movie, writer, producer, and director Mel Brooks says that the two he is most proud of are the running gag about merchandising. He thought that was amazing. And Colonel Sanders renting Spaceballs before it was finished. He thought those were those are the two he's the most proud of. The scene in which Dark Helmet is playing with his dolls was not in the screenplay. Mel Brooks came up with the idea on the set one day, told this to Rick Moranis, and he improvised the entire scene. The scene with the dolls where he's like holding the dolls and everything. He just improvised the entire scene and, like, you know, someone just barged in and he's like, knock next time! Like, it was all just improv.
I didn't see you playing with your dolls, sir.
Yeah, it was all just improvised. Rick Moranis just doing his thing. According to Mel Brooks, George Lucas loved this movie and wrote him a letter after its premiere saying he thought he was going to bust something from laughing so hard. Lucas also told Brooks, had he not chosen to parody Star Wars, this movie would have succeeded as a great adventure movie. Brooks said he was extremely flattered by Lucas's compliments and support.
Lucas is such a nice guy.
Yeah. George Lucas
is such a nice guy.
So this was interesting. The escape pod launch sequence is an unused clip from Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, provided to Mel Brooks by Lucasfilm.
Yeah, nice.
It was just one they didn't use.
Yep, they didn't have a place and they put it in.
Yeah.
Shooting it out of the Statue of Liberty right there.
They were like, there you go. The barf costume was operated by three people. John Candy operated the tail using a hidden control in his paw, while two assistants each controlled an ear. Candy's costume was powered by a 30-pound battery that he wore on his back for the entire movie.
Imagine filming the desert scene.
Yeah.
God.
with, like, because especially in the 80s, you know, they have actual, like, big lights, you know, and those are hot. Like,
I mean, I remember how it was just having, you know, a mic pack strapped to my
Cowardly Lion. A 1 pound
mic. Right, exactly. Well, no, this is what I'm saying. Like, but, like, still, like, if it's, you know, standard, just, you know, it's just cloth, it's going to feel a little heavy. But a 30-pound battery. 30
yeah.
pound, right?
Yeah, it was 30 pounds.
30-pound battery that you just have to lug it's around.
Not a toddler. So I don't know how I just realized this, but I was just looking at it. Not only, so that was the guy from Alien mm-hmm. in the chest burst scene, but that's John Hurt.
No, yeah. That was one thing I found in here. I actually didn't write it down because I was just going to mention it. Yeah, because John Hurt apparently.
I didn't know that was John Hurt.
Yeah, that's why so he John, says John not
Hurt.
Again.
John Hurt, well, I know him. He's in a bunch of British stuff. He's
John
Ollivander.
John Hurt is Ollivander.
Who was he in the movie?
Chest burst.
Yeah.
He played that in the original Alien. He was the original chest burst.
Ollivander, he's one of the doctors.
He's the war doctor in Doctor Who.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's the dragon in Merlin. He's been in a ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He passed away recently.
I knew Ollivander
yeah.
and one of the doctors were yeah. the same person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that was him. And apparently they brought him in, so I didn't write this down, but apparently, They brought him in saying that, you know, they were just going to do, like, just, like, a little shticky thing for Alien. And so, you know, so he agreed to a lower form of pay because he was like, okay. And then when he realized how big of, like, you know, a gag part, it was yeah. and, like, it was a whole big thing where he was going to have to do the chest burster yeah. thing and, like, you know, lay there and, like, scream and all this stuff, he was like, man, I should have asked for a salary. But that was part of why they were able to afford to have him, like, come in and just do that bit. Is that they just kind of, like, fudged how big of a deal it was.
I also really love how all the characters looked semi-close to the actual cast of Aliens.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
They pretty much borderline use the exact same costumes. And almost, I think it was an exact replica of the scene in its entirety. Well, because he was choking on food whenever it happened.
Yeah, he started choking on food, and then the thing burst out.
Right.
He didn't get Pepto-Bismol in time.
No, not in time.
I love that. It's like, get this man some water. And it's like, no, this man needs Pepto-Bismol.
Nah, man, this guy needs some Pepto-Bismol.
No, this I just thought was really funny. So, Spaceballs, the book, the novelization by R.L. Stine, reveals the names of the Dinks to be Rinky Dink, Blinky Dink, Stinky Dink, Pinky Dink, Finky Dink, and Winky Dink. I just thought that was really funny. I thought it was so dumb and so
that
funny.
That makes my heart so happy.
The Dinks.
I will happily march through the desert with the Dinks. I don't
One
care.
One of the Dinks, I saw him briefly, was in the live-action Wizard of Oz, like Oz the Great and Powerful.
Oh, I was going to say one of the Dinks was played by Tony Cox, who played an Ewok in Return of the Jedi.
Oh.
That too. No, but there was another one that was in Oz the Great and Powerful, and he was like Took or Nuke, and he was the one that always hit people on the head.
See, I didn't see Oz the Great and Powerful, so I can't like.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
You know who I'm talking about.
I know
who
you're
yeah.
talking about. Yep, with it's with oh Lord.
With yeah.
Franco.
Yep. James Franco.
James Franco.
Thank
you.
I saw the movie once.
I kept on wanting to say Phil DeFranco. I'm like, that's a YouTuber. That's not wrong guy.
Because when we did Wizard of Oz, I was so young and playing the wizard that I was like, I'm just going to base my wizard off of James Franco's instead of off of the original because I'm way too young.
didn't Danny, like, force you to watch
Wizard?
Or was that the one that you refused?
One that she said that I had to watch before we did it. Which is funny because then I watched it and I was like, okay, but the guy's like 70.
Yeah, like
I can't do that.
No, yeah,
unless you want to put like makeup on me, but so I just did James Franco.
Smart.
And my last fun fact is that the original choice for Colonel Sanders was actually Steve Martin.
That would have been such a great dynamic.
I know. As soon as I read that, I was like, man, that would have been so good.
Oh, not that Colonel Sanders didn't do a bad job.
No, he didn't do a bad job, but no. Steve Martin is Steve Martin, and
Steve
he would have been amazing.
Oh, it's so good.
I mean, he was my favorite part of watching Little Shop. Everything where Steve Martin was on screen, I was like, it's amazing.
Steve Martin is just my favorite part of anything.
He's just so good. I love his style of comedy. I think it's fantastic. Time to recast. Using the people in this room... Not Christian Bale. Using the people in this room, we have to recast. So who do we think we would be in this one?
I think...
I'm going to say it right now. I want John to be Barf.
I agree with that. 100%. I think that's good. I think
and
that's good.
I think going along with that, I think Ben's Lone Star.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I think that's
what
fair.
An honor.
What an Ben honor. And John are Lone Star yeah. and Barf.
That's pretty fair. That's pretty fair.
Sophie's Dot.
That's fair.
Yeah, Sophie would pull off Dot pretty well. So Sophie's Dot, Lone Star, Barf.
I'm stumped with you two. I know.
It's hard to place.
I know one of you has to be Darth Helmet. I just don't know which one.
I don't know.
Because Darth Helmet is a critical character in this movie. Someone has to be it.
Well, we're not making up the entire cast.
I know, but just the main characters, right?
Who would Daniel?
Danielle's president, Scroop.
Sam, I feel like you could be Colonel Sanders.
That's what I was thinking.
Because he's more of like a straight man, I feel like. And Sam is better at playing like straight men in general. So I think you could do Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, out of the specific like main cast selected, you know.
I don't know who Danielle would be.
I think it would be
Russell says Helmet, so Helmet it is.
I would have a ton of fun playing Helmet because I, like Rick Moranis, am super small and would love to have just a giant hat on my head.
I will say her in that helmet would be freaking hilarious.
I think, yeah, seeing Danielle with all of Darth Helmet's like stuff.
Attire.
All the attire and then doing all the little scenes from... Like, looking at the radar, and it's actually Mr. Coffee.
I think Samuel could also be Yogurt. I feel like that would be really funny.
I actually think he could, too. I can see what you mean.
Could be really funny.
I can see what you mean. No, I didn't write this down, but apparently that was so uncomfortable, like, for Mel Brooks. He loved playing it, but he was on his knees. The makeup gave him a rash. Like, it was all just, like, a bad deal.
Tense makeup. Tense makeup with a lot of chemicals.
Also the same with the guy in Pizza the Hut, too.
Oh, God.
That guy... They had to swap. I think they had to swap people for that because they used actual pizza and had to keep it all warm.
Ooh.
To make sure it was all melted.
That's so terrible.
And like suits that big already get insanely hot super fast on set because you get all the lights on you and it's like, oh God.
It's so gross.
Ugh. I mean, and that's the same with Dot too. They made 6 different suits for Dot.
Oh yeah?
6 completely different suits and they had to use all of them. Because they would break constantly, which is why there's slight differences in them. And I think Joan was not meant to actually voice the character at first. They were going to do a stunt double. Mel Brooks was like, nah, this doesn't seem right. And so
it's not working.
Yeah, so you got Joan.
I mean, that's very similar to something that happened with Star Wars, too. Where when they were filming the first one, David Prowse, who was in the Vader suit, thought he was voicing Darth Vader. Then he went to go see the movie. And it wasn't him.
He didn't find out until
he didn't find out until he saw the movie in theaters.
Oh my God.
Oh, that sucks.
That's so he's giving
lies. He's like, guys, I'm
Darth
Vader, and then it's a totally different voice, and he's just...
God.
Dude, that's so devastating.
So mad.
He had a Cockney accent, though, so that would have been very different.
That would have been different. I understand the change, but they should have told him beforehand.
Yes, they should have informed him beforehand. For sure. So, favorite and least favorite moments from this one.
There's so many favorite moments.
My favorite joke of the whole thing was the one with the assholes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surrounded by assholes.
I knew it. I'm surrounded by assholes. Like, all but, like, 2 or 3 people stand up.
Apparently, it was all but one. There was only one guy who didn't stand up.
There was two.
Oh, according to IMDb, there was only one.
Ooh.
I'll say I saw 2 people sitting.
John
so
with John with the eagle eyes, an extra person somewhere.
Let's rewatch.
Well, IMDb, get it together. Apparently, there were 2 people.
Yeah. I'm gonna change that.
Oh my goodness! But yeah, no. I honestly have to agree with Ben. I think the major assholes. I laughed the whole scene. Like I could not laugh at that scene. It was so good. I also did enjoy the like. They've gone plaid.
I think just the opening panning shot of the ship was my favorite.
That was great.
It is very funny. I laughed multiple times because it just kept going, and I thought it was so funny.
See, all I had running in my head while that scene was happening was just the SpongeBob reference of...
Where it takes absolutely forever.
Just to get to the Krabby Patty.
That's all that was running through my head, so that... It did make it great, but not my favorite. Not my favorite.
That and probably the VHS...
The VHS.
Those two were definitely my favorite parts.
The VHS cannot talk is probably my favorite scene. Though I do have a favorite one-liner when Barf and Lone Star are going like through the checklist of things they need to do, and Lone Star is like, "Pray to God, praying to God." That is something that we say in my house all the time. Pray to God.
I like that. I like the shtick of just everything he says is just instantly repeated no matter what it is. I thought that was funny. Yeah, anyone have least favorite moments?
The anti-Semitism.
That's true. Actually, that was a fact that was put in here that it was weirdly controversial. Like, just the fact itself contradicted itself. Like, it was weird. It was like, let me see if I can find it, honestly, because it was so ridiculous.
I just saw it, and it said that Mel Gibson was...
Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks. Anti-Semitism, Mel Gibson? I mean, come on. Mel Brooks was as ashamed that he put it in the movie as he was proud that he left it in.
So it was weirdly contradictory. It was like he
stated
like,
that on the movie commentary.
Yeah,
he said that he was as ashamed that he put it in the movie as he was proud that he left it in.
So even he was conflicted about some of
the things. He was very conflicted about
He's like, they're funny, but...
Yeah, like he was proud of the comedy, but kind of like cringing
My thing is if it's in a comedy like this, I'm okay with it.
It depends for me.
Like, if you are doing a parody farce, it's like stand-up comedy. Like, almost anything goes. You may not like it.
It depends.
I don't like it, but I'm not upset by it.
The ones in this movie didn't upset me as much as things that I've seen in other things.
Yes.
In this movie, I felt like it was much more just leaning into, like, absurd comedy, stereotype stuff. Yeah. And basically, like, as it made the joke was sort of acknowledging the stupidity of the joke it just made.
Exactly. Yes.
And so for that reason, I was okay with it, because I was like, okay, it doesn't, you know, I don't feel like they're actually insulting a people. I feel like they're being stupid and acknowledging that they're being stupid. And so
that's kind of the whole gist of comedy in general. It's kind of like sit there, it's like looking in a funhouse mirror and pointing back at yourself and just laughing. It's like,
yeah,
this is really screwed up, but we're going to say it in a funny way so you realize it's screwed up, but hey, at least it's funny.
Yeah. I was okay with the way they did it in this one. I've seen worse.
Well.
Yeah, I've seen things handled way worse in other like movies and shows and whatever.
I think Mel Brooks is Jewish too.
Yeah,
is he? Is he?
Yeah, he is. Jewish.
So he was making
That makes it a little.
So he's got that.
He's joking about himself.
Which is why I was so stunned. When I was like, "Wow, there's a lot of Jewish jokes in here." You're attracted to money and power. Yeah.
Sophie
it's like, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Mel Brooks is Jewish. It was like, wow, there's a lot of Jewish jokes in here. I didn't realize that.
But if he's Jewish, it's Jewish. Not as bad.
I thought so. I was like, you know what? I bet Mel Brooks is Jewish. And I just looked up and sure enough.
Yeah. That does make it better. Yeah. As far as least favorite, it's gotta be how gross Pizza the Hut was. It's gotta be that.
Yeah,
that
was my
least favorite. I liked that joke too much to say.
And
that
see,
was my
I liked
favorite.
The joke.
Like, he was gross, but it was such
was
a good
so
joke.
So gross to look at. Like that was my issue.
I love the exchange, but however, I will say, him eating Pizza the Hut kind of grossed me out a little bit.
Oh yeah, that was so nasty. It was already so gross, and then when he on top of that eats him, I was like I can't eat anymore.
Nah,
it was so terrible.
It's so awful.
Yeah, that was definitely that was definitely my least favorite. Well, I was turning to you for yours.
My least favorite?
Sammy was like, the whole thing.
No,
because there were things that
were
both
things
of us thought were really
liked.
Funny.
That's my least favorite part. Just
like... ASMR by Sammy.
We can't forget the scene of I lost the beeps, the sweeps, and the creeps.
Oh, that was so good. I love that.
That guy just did really good sound effects. And apparently, yeah. That was another thing I looked up, was that...
he did all that, like that whole scene.
Well, he did the whole scene, mm-hmm. and apparently just a lot of sound effects for the movie. Yeah. Like, he just
that
did
That makes sense.
That's how they saved a ton of money, was by just having him do sound effects, because he was so good at it. And then they just decided, let's show it off in this one scene.
And then everything is cohesive, and it all matches. Mm-hmm.
It all matches. Sense.
I don't know what my least favorite part is.
Ben, did you go?
No, not yet. I was trying to think of my least favorite part.
I will say another one of my favorite jokes that I didn't throw out there was the combing the desert. I thought that was funny.
Are you taking it a little too literally? He's like, no, we're following orders.
We're combing the... He said to comb the desert.
We're combing the desert.
They're taking combs to the desert.
That felt to me exactly like an SNL sketch, and yes. I thought that was very funny.
I will say, I do love the kind of just... Again, gotta love contradictory jokes. Where it's like, where Colonel Sanders is like, all right, and they're like in the desert, and there's like, all right, prepare to move. And he's like, why are we always preparing? Just go. And he's like, all right, just go. And he's like, you should sit down, sir. Just falls backwards. It's like, that's why we do prepare to go.
I think my least favorite part was when they were capturing Princess Vespa and using the...
Yeah, that's
that part,
fair.
Yeah.
I didn't find that part, like, necessarily funny.
When they
I
were capturing her.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the thing with Roland?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't agree with that. Honestly, all the stuff with yogurt kind of bored me.
That's fair. I felt kind of the same.
Yeah, like, that whole bit, everything from the desert until she got captured, I was kind of bored.
Yeah, yogurt truly never taught, Lone Star, like, anything.
No.
He, like, moved it...
He just said, use the ring to pick up the statue, and that was like it.
Statue and then dropped it right on Barf's foot.
Oh, yeah.
Gave him back.
It's also just hard for me, because they're making fun of some of my favorite characters of all time. And that's difficult for me.
But the person who made these characters loves it, so...
I know!
And something,
but it's still difficult
And it's like, you know, when people create... I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But if Mel Brooks is, like, a big... Star Wars fan, then this was like, you know, out of like love for it, which
yeah,
I don't know
I
if he is,
he was,
but and that's why it, like, you know, a very Potter
even,
musical is so
even
good
knowing
is made
that George
by fans
Lucas liked it,
it.
Even like, knowing George Lucas liked it, just like even like Dark Helmet, like Anakin Skywalker is one of my favorite movie characters of all time. He's one of the best movie villains of all time, and it's just it can be a little painful sometimes.
But you know, they're not making fun of Anakin Skywalker.
No.
They are just, they're taking, it's like, what if, it's like, take Darth Vader. Darth Vader is just like really serious, dark,
and
scary
and stupid. And I get that, and I can enjoy some of the jokes. And like I said, I think I would have enjoyed a lot of the jokes more if they were in a, like, comedy sketch.
Yeah.
Because even thinking back on it, part of why I'm having such a hard time coming up with a least favorite moment is because a lot of the moments that I can remember, a lot of the jokes, I'm like, okay, that was a good joke.
The rest
it's
of it
just,
was unmemorable.
Yeah.
The whole, as a movie, it didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. I think as a bunch of comedy sketches, it would have worked for me.
Like, this would have been a good series on SNL.
Yeah.
This would have been a really good series on SNL that I would have thought was very funny.
I think that, I think, like, if it had been that in, you know, 10-minute segments, I think I would have really enjoyed it. But I think just as a movie, it just didn't work for
me. Did anyone ever watch Reading Between the Lines as a
yes.
kid? So, you know the cliffhanger, like, every week, the cliffhanger guy?
Yeah.
That's all I'm picturing, but, like, if it was this movie, like, split up, is you get to that segment, it's just, like, the next sketch in the movie. It's the next, like, you know, 5-minute little sketch that they do. Yeah, I think it could have been, I feel like I would have enjoyed it a lot more taking it in like that. Because, I mean, because, you know, like we said, I think I'm just not good at taking in lengthy... you know, hour and a half long, like, gags, unless it's in, like, live theater, because then I'm impressed by just the live theater of it all. Because, like, The Producers is just gag after gag, but I love The Producers. But then again, I've only seen it on stage. So I think maybe that's, like, the main problem for me. I mean, like, I've seen parodies that maybe they were good, but because it was a full-length movie, I just didn't like it. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's just one of, like, my blocks, is, like, if someone's going to show me a parody like this, show it to me in, like, 10-minute segments. Just be like, okay, so we're going to watch 10 minutes today, and then 10 minutes tomorrow, and so on and so on. And I'll probably like it a lot more. And I think Sam would have liked it a lot more that way, too, although he still would have been all sad. Because you're all sad that they're making fun of something you love.
I don't know. It's
mixed feelings.
I can take it a lot better in sketch form than in. And it's not that I'm upset about it. Or,
no, I know you're not upset like about that. It.
It's just it makes it a whole movie of it makes it harder for me to enjoy it.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's just how I am with parodies.
But now you've seen it.
Yes.
But
now I've seen it. Now we can say that we've watched it. Now we can say that we've watched it.
Now you have to watch every other Mel Brooks film, and then you are off the hook.
Oh, God.
I'm not that mean. You watch baseball. You're off the hook.
I'm not. I'm joking, but not really.
Sam just starts, like, crawling inside of himself. Like, please don't make me do this.
You don't see it, but he's just crawling underneath the table.
So let's say out of 10 really gross pieces of pepperoni.
I'll just say out of 10 Winnebagos, but
I want to go with pepperoni.
We're that grossed out by Pizza the Hut.
Yes. How would you rate this movie?
Even 5. Again, because I see the potential, but it doesn't work for me.
Fair enough.
I will say, because nostalgia does play a lot into this, and I love Mel Brooks, I'm going to give it 7.5 gross pepperonis.
Okay.
Its rewatchability is limited. I feel like in order to rewatch this film, you kind of have to, like, do what I did. Just, like, watch it once, take a long hiatus, watch it again. So its rewatchability isn't terrible, but, like, it's not a movie you want to watch, like, every single family night. It'd get repetitive. You'd find all the jokes.
You and the rewatchability, man.
It's important to a movie. It's important to a movie. But the jokes...
I agree a lot. Yeah, I agree a lot with the whole rewatchability thing that John always does.
See, I feel like I just have such a different thing with rewatchability. Like, people will be like, yeah, the rewatchability isn't that great on this. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I feel like my taste with rewatchability is so different from everybody else's. Because, like, after we watched I Am Mother, y'all were like, rewatchability isn't really there. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I would rewatch this so many times.
No,
like,
I think the rewatchability sort of factor of it only really comes into play once you've seen it multiple times.
Yes.
Which is why I give this, for me personally, a 7.
Okay.
I watched it about 3 times. The first time I thought it was hilarious. The second time I thought it was funny. The third time I thought it was funny, but it dies down.
The more you watch it.
Every time I watch
it,
I'm like, okay, I know what's going to happen.
I mean, that's the bane of any comedy, is that there's only so many jokes you can really pull out
and
of
it's,
that.
And the comedy kind of... I think with age, that kind of comedy sort of starts being like less and less funny as time goes on too. But if no one's watched this movie,
watch
I highly
it.
Suggest to watch,
watch
it.
Watch it.
This is such a good... Mel Brooks is such an amazing spoofer.
So mm-hmm.
Initial impact is phenomenal. But
yes.
And if you like Star Wars and you're fine with having a few things kind of just messed up and enjoying a good time, this is a good movie.
Yeah. What do you think, Sophie?
I'm probably going to agree with John, 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe an 8, but probably closer to the 7.5. I definitely, like, I enjoy this movie. I've watched it I don't know how many times. But the storyline is subpar. It's a little dumb. There are like, really funny segments of it that do still, to this day, make me crack up.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean... It is. It's... I don't know.
No, I mean, I see what you mean.
It's not the best movie ever.
No.
It's good.
Yeah, I think I won't rate it as low as Sam, but only, like, a little bit higher. Probably for me, I feel very comfortable at, like, a 5.8. Because for me, like, you know, there are a lot of jokes in this that I thought were very funny. And, like, you know, talking about them, I was like... Especially, like, breaking the fourth wall and, like, you know, the literal combing of the desert and, like, you know, the whole really slow pan at the beginning. There are a lot of things in here that were very clever and I thought were very funny. And I do love, like, physical comedy, you know. You know, for me, like, I think my main issue is that while I love physical comedy, for some reason, a lot of the physical comedy in this just didn't get me as much. And I don't really know why. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't nail it down. But I know, like, in other things, like, you know, I love a lot of the physical comedy in Friends, and Steve Martin does fantastic physical comedy, you know? And so, like, I think there's just a certain area of physical comedy that just doesn't really get me, and I think that was a lot of what he was leaning into in this movie. So, like, that's why I was kind of like, oh, you know, the physical comedy wasn't like, as good, but I can't nail down why, if that makes sense. It was just, like, sort of an overall thing with it that I can't totally nail down. But, like, a lot of the jokes in it I really liked, you know. Fourth wall breaking is always funny to me. I think it's great. The nice dissolve, like, it genuinely made me chuckle. Like, I thought that was really funny. But, yeah, so I feel... For me, I feel very comfortable at a 5.8. There was definitely a lot of moments where I was, you know, a little bored, or where I was kind of like, okay, this part's kind of dragging on a bit. You know, we can move to the next thing. And, like, I probably wouldn't actively go back and watch it again unless it was, like, at a party with friends. And, like, we're all going to be watching it together, especially if it's people who really love the movie. Like, if I was watching it with a group of people who really love it and, like, you know, because that kind of, like, you know, love and laughter is so infectious. And like, you just end up enjoying it more. Yeah. So, like, I probably would watch it again, but it would have to be in that, like, scenario.
It's a feel-good movie. Like, it's nothing about it makes you sad or... I mean, it might make you annoyed, or if you're Sam, it might make you sad. But for me, like, it's something that you can put on, and even if you just leave it in the background while you're doing something else, it's, like, it's fun.
And even doing that might be, you know, really good, because then you just pop in almost, like, sketch style. You pop in and, like, tune in at certain parts, and you're like, huh, that's great, you know, and then you move on. But yeah, so, like... For me, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like it was bad or anything. You know, I didn't hate watching it. It's definitely, by far, it is not the worst thing we've watched for this podcast.
No,
by far, it is not. Dr. Doolittle is the worst thing we've ever watched for this podcast.
Still holds the title.
Still holds the title of zero parrots.
Although zero there was something else that got a zero, I want to say.
I don't remember what it was.
Something got close, but
it didn't get
something
got a one. It didn't get a zero.
Yeah.
But Dr. Doolittle got a zero.
I gotta look at our list of things we've done.
Yeah, you gotta look at it. But yeah, so there were parts of it I enjoyed for the, over the whole, you know, not something that I would love, but if you really like, you know, like the reviewer said, if you really like, you know, slapstick kind of comedy, if you really love people breaking the fourth wall, if you love sci-fi and you're really kind of, you know, engaged in that, you know, world of, entertainment, and so you'll get a lot of the references, you know, then I definitely think this is worth a watch at least one time, like Ben said. You know, this is a plus. It's just such a cultural thing that once you've watched it, when people make jokes from it, you'll now understand what those jokes are from, and you'll be like, okay, great, I know what you're saying, and you can join in on the joke then. But yeah, so do y'all have any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I just want to ask those who hadn't seen it before.
It was just us.
Okay. Pleasantly surprised or not pleasantly surprised?
So,
or about what you expected?
So I always, with parodies, expect the worst.
Okay.
Now, I was staying positive because Sam was already expecting the worst. And so I was like trying to be positive. I was like, it might be really good. You know,
It was about what I expected,
I
think.
I think I was slightly pleasantly surprised because since most of the parodies I've seen have been more, like, modern parodies, which, okay, I don't know who did Vampire Suck. Who did that? The Twilight parody thing that came out?
I was never into Twilight, so I don't know.
Yeah, I hated that. And I went to see it because I was really into Twilight at the time, and so I was like, I want to see if this parody is funny, you know? And, like, watching it now, maybe I'd think it was funny. Maybe I just didn't think it was funny because I genuinely liked the series or whatever. But there were just parts of it that I remember just being so, like, grossed out by and, like, not liking. Same thing with all the scary movies and, like, you know, things like that. I've just never liked because they're so, like, crass and over the top. And to me, just not funny. Like,
yeah, I don't like the over the top comedy.
Yeah, where I'm just like, it all does is make me feel like, ugh. Like, I don't, like, I feel like I shouldn't be watching this.
Yes.
And so that's what I was, I always expect the worst when I'm watching a parody. So that's what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. So I was pleasantly surprised that that wasn't what I watched. Like, that it wasn't, you know, crass, gross, over the top. Like, there were moments that were, like, a little crass, but, like, even then it was still, like, not nearly what I've seen recently. So yeah, I would say I was pleasantly surprised, and I actually found more things that I found funny than I thought I was going to. So yeah, I think I would say I was pleasantly surprised. Would you agree, Samuel? Or say about what you expected?
I think it was about what I expected.
About what you expected.
About what I expected.
Yeah.
And if I were to ask a question, my question, completely serious about this too,
okay,
is what's everyone looking forward to when they release Spaceballs 2, The Search for More Money?
Are they, is that a thing?
That is, no.
It was one of the last lines that Yogurt said to
the Lone Star. Oh, I didn't even remember.
Before they leave, it's just like, when will we ever see you again? And each other is like, well, hopefully in Spaceballs 2, The Search for More Money.
Is Mel Brooks still making movies?
I don't know.
I feel like he hasn't made anything in a while.
I don't think they're, I highly doubt that they will ever make any, you know, Spaceballs 2,
yeah,
or, you know, a Blazing Saddles.
Probably
not. Well, he doesn't really do sequels. Even when he makes movies,
no,
like,
yeah,
he'll
he doesn't
create things that are like maybe similar, but never continuing storyline.
I mean, they did make an animated series of Spaceballs.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that they had done that.
But
because one of the writers wrote most of that, not the play guy, the other guy.
Okay, yeah, Vampires Suck was not by Mel Brooks. I was pretty sure it wasn't. I just had to make sure.
What was?
Oh, Russell was just looking at me like he had heard what I said, so I finished what I was saying to him, and no one was listening to me, so don't, you can put your headphone back on.
But, like, looking for, yeah, looking at other movies, it doesn't seem like it. I mean, he's done things with things like Mr. Peabody Sherman, like, all the Hotel Transylvania.
Toy Story 4.
Yeah, Toy Story 4. So, like, he's working with other... Yeah, he's on Toy Story 4.
Was he an actor in it?
Wait, yeah, what did he do?
I believe he was an actor for it.
I was about to say.
There's no way he directed
that. There's no way.
No, he wasn't a... No.
I would fully buy that movie was directed by a horror director. 100%.
I think it was all Andrew Stanton. I think...
No, he was a...
Who directs the Toy Stories? I thought it was Andrew Stanton.
Mel Brooks was... It says he was Mellifont Brooks.
Mellifont Brooks.
Probably just some animal.
Yeah,
like
some little side character or something.
Oh, John,
I mean,
Lasseter, that's right.
He's just raking in all the money from the
countless
movies he made.
he directed all these spoofs, and I mean, he's like 95 years old.
Is he really that
he
old?
He is
though?
Old.
I mean, he was pretty old in Spaceballs. Like, he was
yeah.
old, but he no, was it, like, you know.
At least in his, like,
late 40s to early to mid-50s or something.
Right, at least.
Yeah.
He's kind of, he's one of those things where it's like, you can slap him on, like, any movie and people will be like, I want to watch this because
mm-hmm.
it has Mel Brooks in it. It doesn't
yeah.
matter what it is.
Yeah.
Kind of like Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
Slap him on a movie
Which
and people
I believe,
will go see.
That might have been a different, I know Dwayne Johnson was going to be in one sort of movie. I'm not sure if it was Spaceballs, but he was going to be in that in something.
I like that as you said his name, your voice resisted just saying Dwayne Johnson, and it started to say Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yes, Dwayne The Rock
I like
Johnson.
That your voice resisted your need to just say Dwayne Johnson.
It almost got to the point where his mind
the
said...
Rock.
Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
Dwayne.
As per usual, this turns into a Dwayne Johnson podcast.
All our podcasts turn into Dwayne Johnson podcasts.
Well, he's amazing.
He's Dwayne Johnson.
What Dwayne Johnson movies have you guys watched?
None.
Okay.
I think that's next week's category.
There's straight up.
Oh my gosh, we should just make the category just a Dwayne Johnson.
There's straight up in one of our earlier podcasts. A, like, 10-minute conversation.
It's just a 10-minute Dwayne Johnson.
It was in The Prestige.
It was
in The Prestige, yeah.
Where we just talked about, like, the last,
how Dwayne Johnson
like,
is
action.
Hugh Jackman. Like, how
yeah.
people will go just
mm-hmm.
to see Hugh
yeah.
Jackman and how Dwayne Johnson is just like...
Mm-hmm. How Dwayne Johnson is one of the last true movie stars left.
Yes.
Exactly. That's where the whole joke comes from, is that Dwayne Johnson is just...
Well, you guys
is
just,
the podcast.
You guys are just going to have to watch Jumanji or something.
Have you seen Jumanji?
I've seen Jumanji.
Jumanji's good.
I like the original Jumanji.
You can like the original Jumanji.
I didn't like the Dwayne Johnson Jumanji.
Why not?
I thought it was stupid.
The original Jumanji was stupid.
But this was stupid. Like, I loved Jack Black in it, and I thought that was great.
Jack Black was great. Karen Gillan was great.
I don't know. I didn't like anything except Jack Black.
Nick
like,
Jonas was actually shockingly good.
Okay, I did actually like Nick Jonas. I thought he did a good job. But Jack Black, I loved, and then
Jack
sometimes
Black playing a white girl.
It was
so
good.
Funny.
And then sometimes I liked
I aspire Kevin to be Hart that man.
Because he had a couple of actual, like, emotional moments that was interesting, and I was like, okay, that's never a thing he does, but all right. So I was kind of down with that, but, like, the rest of it, I was just like, okay. Like, I just, I didn't like
it. I will say, it was part of, it was actually Dwayne Johnson trying to act as somebody else, which was amusing.
Which was interesting, it's because it's never Dwayne Johnson.
He always just plays himself.
So
it's always a trip whenever he acts as somebody other than Dwayne Johnson.
If someone requests Rampage, I still have to watch that, and I haven't
yet.
Another
good Dwayne Johnson movie that came out recently is Fighting With My Family. That's a true story.
Yeah.
That one is really good.
He produced that one as well.
Yep. Yeah. So he just had a cameo in it for the most part. It wasn't like he wasn't a main character, but that's a really good movie.
Well, I mean, that's very, because he came from a wrestling family. Yeah. So that's his whole thing.
Mm-hmm. I will say, if we do watch one, I'd love to watch Walking Tall. That's a great movie.
I don't know what we're talking about. Dwayne Johnson movies are just incredible. But, you heard it here first, folks. Next week, that'll be the request line genre, is Dwayne Johnson movies. So whether it's, like, The Game Plan or Hobbs and Shaw.
Is that next week or...
It'll be next week.
You guys already know I'm going to recommend the Tooth Fairy.
Well, next week is when the request line's going up.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something completely different, because you forget... Dwayne Johnson was in the original Doom movie.
It's not today. He was. It'll be next Sunday is when the request
lines.
The
really terrible Doom movie.
So we're going to pull something out of the hat for this
week. The Tooth Fairy until they changed that to Larry the Cable
Did you put
guy.
His thing in the hat, or are we just waiting on that to do?
You got to remind me of what it
Gremlins.
Is.
Gremlins. Not Gremlins. Goonies. Goonies.
Yes, I've already put Goonies in the hat.
All right. Just checking.
Big Hero 6 is also in the hat.
Yes, it is. It is. I have to write it down officially, but it is in that.
It's not Goonies, it's The Last Samurai.
I knew he said that he wanted to replace Goonies with something else, but I couldn't remember what it was.
I can't keep up. Russell's constantly telling me about movies.
Okay, well, I'll replace that right after we're done with this. But yeah, so I think that's all we have for you guys today. So be sure to follow our Facebook and Instagram at Mad Artists Entertainment, or our Twitter at @artists_mad. We're still working on Call of Cthulhu. We just had our little photo shoot for all of our actors. So within the next, week or two, hopefully we'll start rolling out the cast and everything. So that'll be really awesome. Yeah, so just be on the lookout for that. We'll have more information about, when it's actually going to release and where you can listen to it, all that good stuff. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or requests that we should review in the future, you can just message our social media or email us at banterbox.madartists@gmail.com. And leave us a review wherever you're listening. It'll help us out. And if you would like, we'll give you a shout out in return. Shout out whatever you're doing. If you're doing a business, if you're an actor that just want people to know who you are, whatever you want, we're willing to help you out if you help us out. So we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.